Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
We're going to be breaking down Fight to Win Pro 55 in Denver, Copapodia Iron Brown Belt event, the first week of the sumo tournament, the IJF in Hague in the Netherlands, and a little bit of New York BJJ Pro for IBJJF. We're also going to be previewing Submission Underground 6, as well as Fight to Win Pro 56, the Muscle Farm event. A little more IBJJF coming down the line. The Nogi Worlds are in about a month, so we're going to touch on that and some promotions. Yeah. Hello, and welcome to the Grappling Rewind Podcast. I am Maine, and we are here with Josh.
Howdy.
We're going to start off with Fight to Win Pro 55 in Denver. The event paid out a total of $23,474 in salaries and was headlined by Alvin Robinson defeating Nick Marvia decision.
Motherfuckers jumping in already. Fucking giving away results before we're doing anything else. Let's jump down to Brown Belt really quick. Giving a shout out to Eric Coe, who Maine trained with when he was in Colorado at Dark Horse.
Yeah, really great. Great guy, great gym. Solid Brown Belt when I was down there. He gets a decision over Nick Spacek for a fight of the night for the Brown Belt division.
Shout out to Team No Sleep member Troy Night Pigeon Everett. He defeated Carlos Hernandez by bow and arrow, which got submission of the night and was one of the few matches that I caught while at work. It was kind of busy that night, so I didn't get to watch and work at the same time, which I normally do. Also to the Big Bird, Brittany Elkin, defeated Tara White by split decision, and I believe won the female brown belt.
Yep.
For that weight class.
And Brittany Elkin was actually the woman who went for her Bellator debut, ended up cutting off all her hair to make weight. And we touched on that a couple weeks ago when she was on the Maryland card. That was 2 weeks ago. So she's been very active. I think this is actually her 10th Fight to Win Pro appearance. And she finally, you know, gets the belt after 10 appearances in Fight to Win Pro.
Beast mode is what that is. Maybe I should stop losing and start winning and maybe I'll win a belt.
So onto the black belt results, we have Mark Vines defeating Connor Huron.
Hune. And that was Mark Vives out of Banzai Jiu-Jitsu. Solid dude, trained with him years ago when I was in Chicago visiting my brother at the Naval Academy. He beat me up. It was fun.
Moving on to Julie Hoppenick. Man, I am not so great with these names, Josh.
Tell me about it, brother.
Defeats
Mylene Engel. You're welcome. Split decision.
We have Charles Garfield Rosario.
Gaffield. Oh, this is going to be fun.
Defeating Jesse Jack.
Go ahead. Jacquez.
In a triangle in this mission of the night. And then
as
we have
previously stated, Alvin Robinson defeats Nick Marr by decision.
A smaller card as far as the black belts go. Only, you know, four black belt matches this card. I need to learn how to count.
Yep. Man, it's a hard day. You need to be on that caffeine drive. This episode is sponsored by 7-Eleven Coffee, because that's what I just drank.
Delicious.
What was cool about this card was almost 50% of the matches ended in submission. 14 of the 30 matches. So that's pretty sweet.
They have a nice little infographic up on the Facebook page that shows the breakdown of all the matches, and then it shows the decision. So it's the split decisions for the card, and I really love when they do that because I'm a big fan of infographics because it shows you everything you want to know about that particular event in one place, and it's nice and summarized.
Yeah, you know, pretty colors, things like that. And again, if you check out their Facebook page, normally roughly around the event or the night of the event, they do post little clippets of matches. Like right now I'm looking at it and they have the Troy Everett match where he bow and arrow chokes his opponent.
So we had 14 wins, 3 by heel hook, 5 by armbar, 3 by choke from the back, 1 by Kimura, 1 by triangle, and 1 by my favorite, wrist lock.
Yeah. I mean, again, always good cards, always fun. They're week by week by week by week. So for the most part, you know, once it gets towards holidays or them actually needing a break, they take like a week off and then they come right back at it.
And they typically run their own tournament in that week as well.
Yeah.
The Fight to Win, the non-pro event, their Fight to Win tournaments.
Fight to Win Nationals. And at the end of the show, we're actually going to preview the upcoming cards, the Muscle Farm sponsored card, and the rest going throughout the year. So again, we always will shout them out. They're helping out grapplers, so let's help them out too.
And they put on a fantastic event. So on next, we have Copopodia, the Iron Brown Belt event.
Dumb name. The Iron Brown Belt, really? There's like eight dudes and you're going to call it the Iron Brown Belt?
It's better than like the Iron Chef event where you give out belts.
Whatever, Iron Chef is a badass show. Don't you ever talk about that show badly. I love that show. Ever. Not the American version. That version sucks.
The Japanese version. The good version. Of course.
Which you can find on YouTube, like everywhere. I watch hours of it. That's how I fall asleep sometimes.
So in that event, we had... Give me the name, Josh.
Kanan Duarte. If I'm not mistaken, hopefully I didn't butcher his last name.
Out of Atos.
Yeah, Beast Mode kid. I want to say he won the... Five Invitational, the blue and purple belt thing. I think he won the heavier purple belt one and then got promoted. Maybe not. No, I think I'm lying. I might not be lying. I'm not 100% sure, but I know he was a late replacement in ADCC. And he won one match, and then after that, he got ousted. So,
really fantastic guy. In most of the previews for this event, he was a heavy favorite, or not a heavy favorite, but a favorite to potentially take the whole thing. And so actually, this is an interesting event because this event is first person to win four matches. So there's eight guys total, and there's four up. There's a minimum of four rounds, and Duarte takes it in four rounds. He wins every single one of his matches, and then is, you know, over.
Kind of cool and kind of not cool at the same time. I enjoyed the older Copopodia events where... you know, you had your two bracket blocks where you had your yellow and your green team or whatever color they were using at the time. And, you know, everybody fought everybody. And then the guy with the best record from block A fought the guy with the best record from block B for first and second. And the guys with the second best record were in there. And I screwed that up. It's actually the top two guys from each block. They competed against each other. And then we would see who would win first and second, and then the other two that lost originally would fight for third. Compete. They didn't fight. Nobody fights in jiu-jitsu. They don't punch each other. It's jiu-jitsu. They compete.
Unless it's combat jiu-jitsu.
Even then, that's not really fighting. You're just smacking somebody.
Slaps.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving on to the IJF in Hague, Netherlands this weekend. I watched about 4.5 hours of the event. I don't know if I saw a single Ippon. So kind of moving forward here, we're actually just going to touch on, really cover the Grand Slam events. Because if you really want to follow judo, they do a fantastic job. The IJF does an absolutely fantastic job of covering their athletes.
Wonderful website.
Great. If you ever want to follow it on YouTube, they usually will preview or stream their live events on YouTube. Fantastic commentary. I think as far as... amateur, you know, combat sports, judo, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, go, they have the best commentary team around.
It's professional, actually. They get paid. So, not amateur, but professional judo players. Yeah, you'll see it. It just happened recently in Abu Dhabi where they did that, and the Israeli competitor that won got a big old fancy check. That I think it was like $100,000 something.
They pay out pretty decently. Yes. You know, at the top level. At the lower level, it's still, you know, it's you're looking at amateur paychecks, but they're still getting paid. A lot of times they're nationally sponsored teams.
Some of them. Everybody's competing from their own country, unless you're in Abu Dhabi and you're from Israel, and then you can't have Israel on your back patch and you can't listen to your own national anthem. Not going to get into that. Only, you know, grappling, not politics.
Yeah. So they, again... they have just a fantastic website. They have media outreach on the website. They have about a month or two out after each event, they'll put up a highlight of the top 10 Ippons of the tournament. Again, it's fantastic. It's narrated. They just put out a fantastic product, and it's really someplace I hope that jiu-jitsu gets to one day where they have that level of professionalism, and I hope the IBJJF website becomes more easy to navigate as easily as the IJF website is now.
It's not fantastic, is what you're saying?
I'm saying the IJF website. I was trying to watch New York Pro this weekend, and on their website, I could not find a way to watch it. Couldn't find the way. Had to talk to Josh, and he goes, oh, yeah, it's on Facebook.
Somebody's
and you can
not internet savvy.
Catch the stream there. I just assumed that you go to a promotions website, and then on that website is all the information you need on how to be a spectator at that event, how to watch that event if you're not live at the event, how to sign up for that event, and a lot of that, such as how to watch the event live, wasn't there. It's not there. You had to follow the IBJJF on Facebook to figure out that they're going to stream pieces and parts of it on Facebook.
Yeah, you have to be kind of dorky to know about some of these things. The big tournaments you'll catch on Flow. The rest of the stuff you will not see streamed because Flow does not send cameras out to every single event. The tournament is normally footing that. And so they're not going to bring a camera crew to the 75 billion tournaments that they have because they had the IBJJF New York Pro. They had the Salvador Madrid Open. They had the Salvador Open, like Nogi European.
Yeah, they had four events this weekend.
Running this weekend. It was ridiculous, but awesome because more jiu-jitsu, of course, is awesome. But, you know, you're going to have to settle for here's a Facebook live stream of this or here's this on YouTube.
Yeah, it was kind of tough. And because Flow covered the New York Pro event last year, if you tried to search and how to watch it, a lot of the information coming up was all the streaming information on Flow from last year, the 2016 event.
Yeah, let's not talk about how Flow has redone their website because it's not good.
Yeah.
We redesigned it poorly. It's even more difficult to navigate than previously. And it's
whenever you go to an article now, it loads all of the top like 10 articles. And then you go to scroll into the article you've clicked on the link for. And you scroll to the bottom of like 10 articles because it's loaded all of those articles at the same time. Then you have to scroll back up through all the media to find the article that you've clicked on to then open it and to read more to view the content that you clicked on initially on the link. So, but enough on websites and... and our gripes with how to watch the sport that we are attempting to cover, or the sports we're attempting to cover.
And we're big whiny diaper babies when it comes to this kind of stuff, because it's like, wow, we want this, and we want it fed directly to us. Wow.
I just want tournaments, how to watch them, and their results posted in a consistent, easy-to-find place, so I don't have to spend 35 minutes figuring out who won this event.
We had like a 20-minute discussion about why things went certain ways with referees, and Maine didn't want to accept the answer was because, and he was like, no, it can't be just because. And it's like, that's the way the cookie crumbles on that one, Maine.
So touching on the actual event, New York Pro, we had some good matches.
We had some awesome matches. Another match with Keenan Cornelius and Tim Spriggs, former teammates.
Keenan finally back from that injury. I'm not sure. I haven't seen him compete since that injury unless I've missed it.
He's competed a little bit since that injury. He's been back doing a few other tournaments, but he's just, I mean, ADCC he was just doing, obviously.
Oh, right.
But he was out. He had that leg injury from the Tokyo
trials.
Tournament. Mm-hmm. Tokyo tournament. This was late last year. I want to say.
I remember watching the match and he...
It like popped out
yeah,
and he kept going. And
he won. And then he
won that match, yeah. It was awesome. As we talked about from the Fight to Win Maryland card, Tim Spriggs came out aggressively. Shocks and surprise to no one. He tried to run him out. He tried to take him down really quick. Keenan was aware of this, you know. Goes around and eventually, boom, pulls guard. Shouldn't have snapped. That was annoying. He goes into his guard work, his worm guard, octopus guard, barambola type stuff. You know, whatever one. There's quick changes of hand placement and foot placement, and it changes the name of the guard. So I'm not going to say I'm an expert on that, but he was in that general area. Eventually, he went right to the back, which kind of surprised me and kind of didn't. Tim is a really good competitor, but he got his back taken. And from there, Keenan started to run away with the match. You know, got back to neutral. Keenan came up on top. He passed again, which surprised me. I mean, he's a good passer as well, but again, very formidable. Yes. Tim just beat world champion Leo Nogueira.
And 2 weeks ago in Fight to Win. Again.
So it was kind of crazy. And that's how the match ended. Keenan won on points, won the heavyweight division, the $4,000 that came with that.
Yeah, and New York Pro actually pays out all the black belt male.
Not every single division. It was light, middle, heavy, and ultra heavy, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's correct.
And then there's some additional money for lower divisions.
There is no open class. But
yeah, no, yes, for men.
For men. Feather, middle, heavy, and ultra heavy. So, yeah.
I think a $4,000 first prize, and then there's a $1,000 prize for...
Second.
Yeah, in those divisions. And then the female get... Female adult
black belts, all the masters in the black belts, the adult male brown belt, two open class divisions, the same thing with the purple and the blue, and then open class pays out for masters blue, purple, brown, adult female blue, purple, and brown.
So at least, you know, IBJJF doing a paid event for their
competitors. Actually, the shout out to head referee John Bagels Telford from U.S. Grappling. He was this close to getting that $800 check for the Masters 1 brown belt light open class. He is a light featherweight or a roosterweight. He's tiny, but he's awesome. Great competitor. Super close to that. So he took first and second. So big shout out to him.
In this event, also Ty Murphy, you know, get second in his division.
He won his open class, though.
He did.
So there was that. Ray Alexander, who we talked about at the Fight to Win Pro Maryland. That's a mouthful.
Versus Talita Alencar. And on that event, she ended up losing a decision on the Maryland Fight to Win Pro card, but she takes...
She took gold. She beat Christina Barlin from Kyoteras. Took gold in that division. Unfortunately, which really bums me out, even though there's more and more females competing, the black belt female competitors were super light in this one. As far as what I saw from all the results and everything, it was kind of,
I saw a lot of events, a lot of divisions that had one to two, sometimes maybe three.
Yeah.
And you can see in the results, typically in combat sports, you have two third place finishers, competitors. And if you look through the results on a lot of the female brackets, there's only one third place, which indicates that there was only three people in that division, or sometimes even less, one or two people in that division. So it was very, very light as far as female competitors for
out
this
of
event.
The five divisions of, and this is not including the open class, but out of the five regular divisions for the females, there were seven competitors. So three of the divisions only had one person, and two of them were contested by two competitors, which is kind of a bummer. I mean, I wish there was more female black belt competitors that were there to show as an example to the lower class belts, not lower class, but the lower belts, that, you know, get out there and compete. And again, looking in it, the female classes aren't heavy, and that's it bums me out. That's all. I think it's awesome that women compete. I think it's awesome that they're getting featured more on big pro cards. You know, I don't want jiu-jitsu to seem like a completely male-dominated sport. I want the payouts for the females when they get best female at the end of the year or when they're doing these big tournaments. I want them to be getting paid the same amount as the guys. It makes sense. Like, why would you not have that?
Right.
You know, and they're all black belts. You've all put in your time. Some of these people are world champions. Like,
yeah, I think the argument for IBJJF and why they don't pay the females as much is because the turnout is just, the divisions are so much smaller. It's hard to...
Well, maybe pay them more and more people will show up. Whatever. You know, it should be that way. It's not right now, but it should be. Moving on, going to the featherweight division finals, we had Jameel Hill, again, on the Maryland Fight to Win card. How about that?
Again, Team Lloyd Irving.
Yep. Versus Silvio Duran.
Fast match, only a couple minutes.
I don't know the official time. The length of the video was almost 4 minutes, so that gives you an indicator of you have the whole bowing running out. shaking hands, all that other stuff.
Hand raise at the end.
Right. All of that stuff, plus restarts. Hill came out and tried to spear. That's the best way to put it. That wasn't even like a setup takedown. He literally tried to just bowl over Duran. He got it. He got the two. Mm-hmm. He came in, ran him out, knocked him on his ass, got the two. They got back up. Another Lloyd Irvin go-to move is a foot sweep. This one looked like a legit low kick. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
It was a little hard from the video I watched.
But it was amusing.
Kicks him in the leg.
And then immediately goes to pull, starts fighting for the Kimura grip, gets restarted back in the middle, goes for the collar.
Goes to De La Hiva.
Yeah, right into De La Hiva. Like, Duran comes up and goes for De La Hiva. Duran falls and goes for the feet. You know, a lot of back and forth, and Hill just looked like it was a regular day of training. You know, boloed, went to the back. After the back, immediately attacked. It was second nature.
He almost attacks in transition. He turns the corner, gets on the back, and his hand is on that lapel grip immediately.
Immediately, like, went for the finishing part of the choke as soon as he came up with that grip. It was great. Finishes it with like a modified bow and arrow back collar choke. It was
almost
fast.
From the top, though. It was really interesting to see him kind of finish. I had to watch the video a couple times to figure out exactly what he had finished with. So he gets the bow and arrow choke and he kind of rolls him so that he's on top of him and he's pulling up
and he's using his leg as like a stopping point to push against it.
Yeah, really is fantastic technique. Great gets match. The tap and then wins the division.
Yeah, gets that $4,000 check. And then the other match that they had put up on their stream, and again, very light on video, was Otavio Nalati, who is obviously not American, he's Brazilian, but is representing Lloyd Irvin, versus João Gabriel Roca from Soul Fighter. Man, I wish I didn't watish it. I wish I just read the results and called it a day, because this is why people don't like watching heavyweight jiu-jitsu matches, because it was just boring, boring grip fighting. It was the worst 10-minute judo match ever. I take notes on this stuff so we can talk about it. We can discuss it. I can send it to Maine, and Maine's like, oh, okay. Maybe I'll see something different, or maybe I can build on these.
Yeah.
And literally the first note I wrote is, Jesus, this is boring.
Yeah, Josh sent me this match to watch, and I watched it, and then I didn't take notes on it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know why he had sent it to me, other than it's a match that happened that IBJJF posted, because they only posted a handful of matches.
Yeah, and I don't know why they didn't post the middleweight match. You know, you post the featherweight match, you post the heavyweight and the ultra heavyweight. You didn't post the middleweight match. Very, very confusing to me. But it was boring. João Gabriel went for a weird half-hearted drop Seo very close to the corner. It didn't count. It got him the advantage, which eventually won him the match. And then they just literally gripped back and forth and pushed each other around the mat. I'll do this in comic book guy voice. Worst judo match ever. Yeah, that was my end note for this, because it was boring. João Gabriel is better than that. I have not seen Nalati compete, but I'm pretty sure he's better than that too. I wish somebody would have pulled guard.
These guys are black belts. I mean, we know they're better than that. It's
do something.
It's just sometimes you get stinker matches.
Yeah. So, quick rundown of all of the divisions that were in the New York Pro for the black belts and the female black belts. Featherweights, Shane Taylor, Shane Hill. They always call him something different.
He has about four names that they use.
Yeah.
I think he was on, I think I have him as Shane Jamil Hill is the name I'm most familiar with him
using. We'll go with that one. He takes first, beating Silvio Duran again by collar choke from the back. And Felipe, we're going to go with the first name that they're listing. Felipe Hugo and Kevin Mahesha, again, we're terrible at names, round out the featherweight division. the middleweight division. Felipe Silva takes first place in that, defeating Manuel Hibemar from NS Brotherhood. And
makes
then,
you give Goldberg a lot more credit now.
Huh?
Makes you give Mike Goldberg a lot more credit now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody thought he was an idiot. And
then I go to read these names and I'm like, man, Mike Goldberg's really, he messed up like one name, and you know, every 3 months or something like that.
And people just ate him alive for it. Yeah. Well, try doing this all the time and you will feel that pain that Mike Goldberg felt. Marcos Tinoco from Alliance, Vitor Silveiro, who is now Gracie Baja, round out the middleweight division. Onto the heavyweight division. Keenan takes first, Tim Spriggs second, and Matthew Layton took third. There was apparently only 3 guys in that division. The ultra heavyweight division, João Gabriel Rocha from Soul Fighters takes first. Otavio Nalati from Lloyd Irvin takes second. Gabriel Lucas from Checkmate and Max Jimenez from GF Team round out the ultra heavyweight division for the New York Pro. Again, back to these light divisions. It's going to be easy to run through this stuff. The featherweight division was won by Array Alexander, Team Lloyd Irvin, and second place was Christina Barlin from Kyotera. Black belt female middleweight was Laura Halleck from GF Team, only person made weight. That's what you do. Medium heavy black belt females, Natalia DeJesus, I want to say DeJesus from Cicero Costa, made weight, won her division. Heavyweight division, Jessica Da Silva from Gracie Baja won the heavyweight division and beat Maria Maliziak from Zenith BJJ, also on the Fight to Win card from Maryland. From Zenith, she took second. And no one was in the super heavyweight black belt division except for Tayane Porferio from Alliance. But she did win the open class, beating Natalie... Again, terrible names. I'm not going to say it. DeJesus from Cicero Costa. And then Maria from Zenith again took third place in the open class. So that rounded out New York Pro.
Yeah. If you're going to rewatch a match, I'd watch rematch the Shane Jamil Hill match. It's really just fantastic back and forth. Great technical.
There was no
match.
Back and forth. Don't lie to the people. There was no back and forth. There was literally a spear and then a back take and a choke. If you want a little bit of length to a match, Spriggs and Keenan, that one you'll actually see. The other one, Shane Hill just steamrolls.
You want to look at a good steamroll match, we watched the Shane Jamil Hill match. Just fantastic grappling at display there.
Yeah, it was good. Good. It's good.
So we're going to move into the preview section of this. We're going to preview Submission Underground 6, as well as the Fight to Win Muscle Farm event, Fight to Win Pro 56, and touch on promotion. So we're actually going to start with promotion. De La Hiva. My notes say DLR, not so I went
yeah,
De La
there
Hiva,
you go.
Because it's a joke. De La Hiva was promoted to Coral Belt today, actually. This is the 19th of November, 2017. You know, there are not many people that have contributed as much to modern jiu-jitsu as that dude. Been a black belt for 31 years, promotion to Coral Belt?
Yeah, 31 years. He was promoted by the eldest Gracies, Hasten and Hobson Gracie, ninth degree red belts. If you're not aware of how that all works, only the creators of jiu-jitsu are allowed to get 10th degree black belts.
Nine is as high as you go.
Right. And when it comes to all of these things, when it comes to degrees on your black belt, it's time in. It's not anything else.
You're not testing for it or
you're not testing for it. You're not competing to get these things. Yeah. You've just been in jiu-jitsu for a really long time.
Once you earn black belt, the first, I think, 3 years for the first, is it four stripes? Three stripes.
3 years for 1, 2, and 3, I believe. And then it goes to 4 years for 4 and 5. And then it keeps adding
five
more years,
I think, until you get up to coral.
It's,
basically. But it's you spend your
5 and then 6. It's a weird convoluted system that I don't 100%.
And also UAE and IBJJF and every ranking organization kind of does it differently. So it gets kind of convoluted. Once you get to black belt, really, we actually, interesting enough, we had a coral belt match a couple weeks ago. You very rarely, I've actually never seen two coral belts compete. And so having that coral belt match was really interesting to see, A, guys working for the takedown, but B, super old guys, you know, still competing. I think the minimum to get coral belt is 50 something, probably.
Depends on when you get your...
If you get your black belt at 19 like, and then 31 years later, so whatever 31 is plus 19, 50?
50.
Math. Not my strong suit. Math. I'm a grappler, not a mathematician. So 50 is the youngest you can get coral belt.
I think
so.
You can get black belt at 18, can't you?
No.
No?
You cannot.
They changed that?
They changed that a while back.
All right.
So yeah, 16 is blue, 17 is purple, 18 is brown, 19 is black. If you're following IBJJF,
yeah,
but Nikki exactly. Ryan got promoted to purple at 15?
I don't know. I don't know.
So we get a preview, Fight to Win Pro 56, the Muscle Farm sponsored event.
Yeah, this one's going to be pretty interesting. We're just going to hit on the black belts. Again, this is, most of the time they do about 30 matches, which is awesome. Again, that's a lot of jiu-jitsu to watch.
And they get through it really fast, which is great.
They burn through it. They try to keep a really good schedule, and they try to keep tight to it, and they just... Burn.
You're never
burn.
Bored at an event. Even when you're watching it live, there's not that huge intermission. There's no commercials. It's event. It's competitor to competitor to competitor to competitor. It's the last person subs, the next person's on in 2 minutes, and the match is going.
And you get to listen to a lot of weird music that people decide to walk into. It's kind of amusing. So, starting at the first black belt gi match on the card, it's at 132, not 135. That's strange. I don't know, whatever. Ron Henderson from Checkmat versus Andre Pontes from Hibero Jiu-Jitsu. Going up to a 155 black belt no-gi match, Jose de Jesus Gutierrez versus Carlos Gomez. Jose is from Checkmat, and Gomez is from Gerson San... Oh my, Gomez Jiu-Jitsu. I'm going with that one. There's two things, and I cannot read. Next, gi match again at 165 is Bruno Marchi from Alliance versus Adrian Vasquez from Ciapolista. 170 black belt gi match, Quan Barboza from Carlson Gracie versus Juan Bernardo from Victory MMA. 180 black belt no gi match, Jerry Hallert from Comainju. Ooh, they're hurting. They're trying to do it. Versus Fernando Machado. No relation, maybe relation, from CMMA. 185 black belt gi match, Brian Mendez from Hibero Jiu-Jitsu versus Mike Cody from Street Sport. 195 black belt gi match, Rodrigo Atunes from Paragon versus Steven Martinez from Peerless Jiu-Jitsu.
Paragon is the gym that Bill Cooper
and Jeff Glover
compete,
you know,
out of, actually.
All those guys.
Run.
Yeah. 195 black belt no gi match, Gokor Greg. I can't read this last name.
His last name is Ambarian.
Ambarian from Highest End Martial Arts versus Marco Cruzat from Street Sport. A 203 black belt gi match. Again, kind of weird. Omar Saba from BTT versus Greg Hamilton from Jean-Jacques Machado's. 175 black belt no gi match, John Combs, Easton BJJ, who is a regular on Fight to Win, versus Diego Romalo from Zenith, or no, not Zenith, ZR, Zeragiola team, who broke away from Gracie Baja.
Yeah, he's probably regular because Fight to Win is based out of Colorado. Easton is where Seth Daniels trains out of, so there's probably some sort of connection there, and he puts him on because it's exciting.
He's a monster competitor. 145 black belt no gi, Marvin Castell from 10th Planet. He is that very tall gentleman with the always wearing the crazy uniform of spats and whatnot, versus Brandon Walnelski from Clark Gracie, the most photogenic man in jiu-jitsu. 200 black belt no-gi match, Shannon, that is a weird way to spell Shannon, but I'm gonna say it's Shannon, Kalos from Atos versus King Kevin Casey from Hicks and Gracie's. That's always, I wonder if he's going to have Spencer Pratt wrap him out to the match.
Maybe. If you're not familiar with Kevin Casey is a UFC fighter.
I think he's not in the UFC anymore.
He fought the day after Muhammad Ali died. Is the last time I saw him fight. I think he might have got cut, you're right, because Muhammad Ali is actually his wife's father, I think.
Really?
Or his uncle. He's somehow blood, not blood related, marriage related to Muhammad Ali, and he talked about it because he won that event. I think Kevin Casey, last time I checked for MMA, was 2-2, 2-2 in his last 8 fights. 2 wins, 2 losses, 2 draws, 2 no contests.
Weird. He's a weird dude. Look into his...
rap album.
Well, not his. That's Spencer Pratt's rap album. Or no, he has a rap one too.
He has a rap album as well.
You're the hip-hop guy. You should know this.
I do. That's what I'm saying. He has a rap album.
It's garbage. That's what I'm going to say.
It's not that great.
It's terrible. This is a 140-pound no-gi match, which is kind of weird. I think he's on the card just because he's a big name now because of his brother. Ricky Lull from 10th Planet versus Nikki. I look like a 12-year-old Ryan. Cool kid.
Good jiu-jitsu.
I think he's like 16.
15 or 16 now.
Brown belt? I don't
last
think
time I saw Nikki Ryan got promoted to purple belt, I thought it was this year, but I could be
wrong.
It
might be brown. I have no idea. Like, they really don't follow IBJJF. He doesn't really compete in the gi that I've seen. All I know about him is that he's a tiny little monster. When we had Gary Tonin at our gym for a seminar, and then also we invited him to a cookout that we had, and he came, was that he got a text message from, I'm guessing, Gordon, that Nikki broke another adult's foot when he was 13 years old with a heel hook.
You've seen him. You know
you've
him.
You've seen him. He went at it with AJ Agazarm at ADCC. So that'll be an interesting match to watch.
Yeah, Ricky Liu. Do you know him?
Lul Liu. I do not.
Is that that's 10th Planet guy that has that heel hook video with all those views from Fight to Win, from the earlier Fight to Wins, I thought.
Is that him?
I think that's him.
I thought that was Marvin Castell.
That is Marvin Castell, actually. That's correct. Yeah, because I know that Nikki Ryan has a back and forth with 10th Planet. They kind of have a rivalry going on.
Yeah, I think Nikki just beat Marvin, actually.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
He just beat him heel hook.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Moving on to the co-main event, the female black belt no-gi flyweight title. That is a mouthful. Patty Fontes from Checkmat, awesome competitor, versus former Fight to Win Pro Maryland competitor.
About 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, 2-3 weeks. At this point, it'll be about almost a month. Versus Talita Alencar from Cobrinas. She already holds the gi title now. She's going for the no gi. She's trying to, you know.
Oh, I missed that. I missed that it was a no gi bout.
Yeah, it's a no gi bout. She will be the second person to hold both belts in the weight class. Gianni is the other person. Yeah. Gianni Grippo has the gi and no gi title.
And we saw her compete in a fantastic match.
Great match.
If you want to hear about it, it's on our first episode.
If you want to watch it, go to flowgrappling.com.
It's a really fantastic back and forth with Aranya, with
Ray Alexander. Aranya.
The one who just won on Fight to Win, on the
New York Pro
event.
I believe Aranya means spider in Portuguese. It might. I don't know.
Fantastic. This card is just looking exciting.
And then the main event, Eddie Wolverine Cummings from Henzo Gracie. Guess what he's going to do in this 155 black belt no-gi match? Probably going to go for the legs. Versus
going to go heel hook.
I'm just assuming. Versus Jacob Sandoval from Cobrinha BJJ. Young, awesome competitor. It'll be an interesting match to watch to see if, you know...
Cummings is coming off an injury, right?
Another injury, yeah. Yes.
This will be the first... Again, I had not seen him since... he got injured.
Yeah, it's been a while. He was supposed to compete in ADCC, and he actually... That's why Nikki Ryan filled
it. He
dropped from that. So, yeah. It'll be an interesting and awesome card. Hopefully a lot of submissions. There are a lot of people on here who are very submission savvy or go for the submission.
Yeah, I foresee it being a lot like the Maryland card, just full... top to bottom with great matchups.
Excitement.
This is actually in Los Angeles, California. I think Eddie Cummings is actually sponsored by Muscle Farm as well, which is just an interesting thing. This is a Muscle Farm event. I think he always has the MP on his rash guard.
The whole, like all the Danaher Death Squad guys, yeah. The main guys. I'm not saying all of Henzo Gracie's, but like
a lot of the main guys.
Nikki, Gordon, Gary, Eddie. I think they're all sponsored by Muscle Farm.
That's correct.
You will see Gordon's muscles sponsored by Muscle Farm. He's always got that. I post that in all of his Instagram stuff. I'm not surprised if he just doesn't do like lines of pre-workout. And
he's gotten a lot bigger. There's a really cool photo of him. It shows him 18, 19, 20, just 4 years of him. And he has gotten
huge
in
he's
4 years.
Huge.
He's also now dating a Brazilian fitness model who is also
sports
huge.
Figure model. She's big.
Yeah,
she has got a lot of
huge
muscles.
There was actually a big discussion with Gordon could make the weight for ADCC,
which
he had gotten so big.
Did, and soon they're releasing a video, something I was reading from an Instagram post, that they're releasing a video of his workout pre-ADCC and how he cut to get to 88 for ADCC. So I'm kind of looking forward to that one because that's a big-ass dude now.
Yeah, he got huge. So, but he's, again, exciting. The whole card, top to bottom, just looks fantastic. I will definitely be watching probably the whole thing in a week. Moving on, we're going to break down, or sorry, preview Submission Underground 6 happening December 3rd.
Sug. That is Kale Sonnen's little...
You're Kale?
Kale? I don't know.
Kale Sanderson, Chael Sonnen. Chael P. Sonnen.
Assholes. Whoever names their kids these names, they're just assholes.
This is happening in Portland, Oregon, where it usually happens. Chael's based out of Portland. He runs the event out of Portland. And usually it's full of a bunch of retired MMA fighters, or current, actually, MMA fighters.
Some.
This event is no different. It is headlined by Gilbert Burns versus Jake Shields. Josh, you know what weight class that is at?
I'm going to assume around 185.
Yeah, I assume you guys aren't going to cut for that.
Maybe a little bit less. Burns competes at welterweight. Jake Shields competes at welterweight and middleweight. So
yeah. We just saw Burns a couple weeks ago with a Maryland card versus DJ Jackson. That was at 185, I believe. So it wouldn't surprise me to have that bout be at 185 as well.
And 2 weeks previous to that at the Brooklyn card, Jake Shields was on that one versus Murilo Santana. Shields, I don't remember that one, but Shields, again, is relocated to Brooklyn or New York. He trains at Henzo's now full time. His words were he needed to change the scenery, so he got to change the scenery.
So this would be an exciting matchup. You know, Jake Shields, American Jiu-Jitsu versus Gilbert Burns, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
I'm shaking my head right now because it's another one of those things that I think is kind of ridiculous. The American Jiu-Jitsu. Apparently a really cool guy. Shout out to Kenny Savercool, who got to stay with Jake and his brother. And when he was traveling around, hey, Kenny, release all that footage from the cult thing that you were going to do. That would be awesome.
In the co-main event, we have Tim Sylvia versus
Fabiano Scherner, both former UFC competitors. Tim, obviously, former UFC heavyweight champion. Last I remember, I say way too much. And I also last I remember, Tim Sylvia looked like a giant, fat-shaved bear.
So last time I remember, Tim Sylvia was actually scheduled to fight his retirement fight in Russia on the same night that John Jones was to face Daniel Cormier the first time. And Tim Sylvia missed weight. He weighed in, I think, at 371 pounds.
Jeez.
I think he missed weight by 106 pounds, which is, I could be incorrect.
Wait,
it was a heavyweight bout. It was a heavyweight bout.
What?
I could be incorrect about this. I'll have to go check. But he hasn't fought professionally since that bout. I think it was 2013. When that happened. So I really haven't heard a ton from Tim Sylvia in that time, but Tim Sylvia is based out of, I'm not sure he's based out of now, but
he's the maniac.
So
you should know that.
I did. My old coach, Marcus Davis, you actually was Tim Sylvia's, one of his first coaches in MMA and speaks highly of Tim. You know,
Marcus
frequently.
Davis, the Irish hand grenade, Marcus
yeah,
Davis?
That was my coach.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's why I love legs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Tim Sylvia, like, his former nickname was, I believe, the bear or the grizzly bear, something like that, because he was hairy and gross and fat.
And 6'8".
And a giant monster. And now he's hairy and gross and fat. Last I heard, he was a cop and fought occasionally. I remember him getting knocked out by some former boxer when he should not have. And then he just got beat the shit beat out of him by a whole bunch of people that shouldn't have beat him, except for Fedor when he was right before he started sucking. Fabiano Scherner is Chael Sonnen's jiu-jitsu coach in the gi, mind you. So I'm not shocked that he's on the card. Great gi competitor. I'm going to take a guess that it's a no-gi match, though. I didn't even know Tim Sylvia knew anything about jiu-jitsu. I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Sylvia tries to punch Fabiano Scherner, because this is taking place in a cage. Won't be surprised if he tries to punch him.
No. After before that, actually, we have AJ Azgam versus Nathan Orchard.
Yes, yes.
Azgam.
Crabapple. Agazarm.
Agazarm. I've actually never been able to pronounce AJ's name. I've heard it pronounced repeatedly for the life of me. I just cannot get the pronunciation of his name.
I'm dying
over here.
I see
a Z next to a G and an A, and I get confused and scared.
Oh, this is great. As we all know, AJ Agazarm is the mouth of jiu-jitsu. He wants to be Chael Sonnen, but is a terrible talker. And
he's got good jiu-jitsu, though. Give him credit. He's at a Gracie Barra.
Baja.
My first gym was Gracie Barra. I should
Baja
get that correct. Versus Nathan Orchard, a 10th Planet guy. We just saw Nathan Orchard get TKO slapped in the face.
By another competitor on this card.
By Wagner Hosha.
Yeah, who is later on the card. We'll get to that in a second. I just like that in the preview for this, that they call him 10th Planet Wizard. And they don't use a comma, like, as in, it's a run-on sentence. It's like, AJ Agazarm, take, that's the other thing. Hey, Flow Grappling, edit your articles properly. You know, proper English punctuation, that'd be great. AJ Agazarm, take on 10th Planet Wizard, Nathan Orchard. That's, how about 10th Planet Wizard, comma, Nathan Orchard, comma. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my English is bad.
You know, actually, it should change a couple things in that sentence. It's actually the whole, that is a full sentence. They have a paragraph that's one sentence. Prior to the headlining matchup, we'll see AJ Agazarm take on 10th Planet Wizard Nathan Orchard, along with a bout between violent jiu-jitsu evangelical Wagner Hosha and UFC fighter Jesse Taylor. That's one sentence.
Yeah, it's a one really long sentence. Again, commas. It breaks
so this
it
be
up.
This would be an interesting match. I foresee AJ
Agazarm beats the shit out of Nathan Orchard. There is nothing Nathan Orchard can do or should do to AJ Agazarm. AJ is getting adjusted to being even lighter. You know, he fought at the lowest, at the 66 kilo at ADCC. This is 155. If he loses, this is a win-win situation for me, because I am not a fan of AJ Agazarm. I think he's a cunt. I'm not going to mince words when it comes to people that I don't like. You'll find that out really quickly. I think he's a cunt. He's a good competitor. I'm not going to even say great. He's good.
He's very good.
He's good. I mean, he went at it with Cobrinha. He took second in ADCC. I'm not taking that away from him, but he's done a lot of shit where it's like, I'm glad some of this stuff is happening to you. Like when I watched him get choked unconscious by Gary Tonin at New York Open, that shit was hilarious.
It's pretty great.
So if he wins, it's like, all right, you should have won. But if Nathan Orchard beats him, holy shit, am I going to have a field day with that. I might piss my pants. So it's win-win for me either way. Either AJ wins because he's supposed to win, or Nathan Orchard wins, and I pee my pants laughing because you got beat by Nathan Orchard. And this isn't a knock on Nathan Orchard. Nathan Orchard more than likely can beat the ever-loving shit out of me when it comes to jiu-jitsu. But there are two different tiers of grappler. You know, you've got Nathan Orchard, who's, you know, very EBI-focused.
Yeah, submission only.
And these rules in SUG are like EBI.
Very, very similar rule set.
But AJ Agazarm doesn't tap to anything. And he's next level winning. I mean, ADCC second place.
Almost ripped off by Gary Tonin.
Broke that shit. That shit was fucked up.
Yeah. What was that organization was that in?
That was in Fight to Win.
In Fight to Win.
In the gi.
You should, if you get a chance to watch this match, I forget what event it was. Gary Tonin versus AJ
Agazarm. It was probably like
10
of them ago.
And
Agazarm.
Whatever his name is. Gary Tonin has a knee bar on him and extends, and you see Gary looking at the knee, and you see the knee begin to hyperextend backwards, and AJ just looks at him.
And yeah, AJ, he made a face, but he was not tapping.
And then you see the end of the match, doesn't tap, match finishes, and AJ stands up, his knee buckles backwards. And then the next day, he puts out an Instagram video with him
squatting. It was like a week and a half later, squatting with a girl on his back. Kind of creepy and weird. And a couple of weeks before that Fight to Win match, he had a match against Wagner Hosha at Fight to Win, and Wagner Hosha front kicked him off the platform, which was, again, hilarious.
So moving on to the next match. So that's definitely a match I'm gonna tune in for. Yeah. I think it's on Flow Grappling.
Yes, it is.
So that'll be exciting.
And Flow Combat. So that'll be exciting. It's on both. You can watch it on both.
Next we have David Mitchell versus Anthony Smith.
No idea. These might be local Portland people. This might be me completely forgetting these people's names and it being an awesome match. But if they've promoted the main card, obviously Maine and I will look into it more and go, oh, these are these guys. We're assholes for not knowing this.
Yeah. But if you're on the main card, I mean, if you're above the next match, Wagner Hosha and Jesse Taylor, I mean, obviously there's a reason for it. You're probably going to put on a great show. On to the next match, Wagner Hosha and Jesse Taylor.
Wagner Hosha and Jesse Taylor are not in the same weight class at all. Like, Jesse Taylor fights at middleweight. He struggled to make welterweight. Wagner was at 77 kilos
for ADCC? 70 for EVI just a couple weeks ago. Oh, I'm sorry, 55. He was 55 because it was lightweight.
55 for the CJJ.
At CJJ, like last week.
Right. So Wagner is definitely smaller. Taylor's jiu-jitsu is mainly centered around guillotines and rear naked chokes and running you over and being big and oafy. I love that. He's like a giant golden retriever or yellow lab where they just come in all derpy and you're like, oh, I love you just because you're cute dummy. That's what Jesse Taylor is to me. The shit he says is amusing. I love it. Wagner is slowly becoming the actual bad guy of jiu-jitsu. Talks a lot of shit about people, and it's fantastic.
But he backs it up.
He backs it up.
Like, man, he has. We've seen him perform, even the past month.
Yeah, I think he's going.
We've covered him a couple times.
Every time we've done a podcast,
yeah, he's been three competing. Of them. But you have a guy, he's, you know, ADCC onto Combat Worlds, onto the EBI card before that, EBI 13,
yeah,
with Gary Tonin. He's
going
constantly active. He's on a different card in a different state every single week. So, you know, shout out to him.
I think he's based out of Florida, if I'm not mistaken. So he has not been in Florida a whole lot.
No.
Since this has all been going on. Yeah. So, of course, that's just the main card. This is the quote-unquote official lineup. They have tons of undercard action.
Usually they go on, they have a huge, from blue belt all the way up to local black belts, they usually put on
three to 5 hours of grappling before the main card starts.
Yeah. And initially it's kind of confusing if you watch it. You look and you're like, okay, what am I watching? It's just match after match after match after match after match. So if you're in, you know, to watch a grappling event, I think it's actually on a Sunday.
It is on a Sunday. It's the same day as something that we're about to preview in just a moment. EBI Absolutes.
Part two.
Yeah. So moving on, we're going to do a small teensy bit of a preview of EBI 14, The Absolutes 2, Electric Boogaloo. Right now, we only have we have seven competitors that have been listed so far. Gordon Ryan, obviously being the absolute champ. Dan Borovic, who's been in it. Craig Jones, ADCC standout. Adam Sacknoff from 10th Planet, a.k.a. Big Red. Another Fight Sport black belt. Marcel Gonclaves or Gonclaves. I'm an idiot when it comes to names. I can't remember how to pronounce anything. He's in it. Travis Moore also in it. And I just found this because I try to follow a lot of jiu-jitsu stuff and I always watch the 10th Planet qualifiers when it comes to EBI. Patrick Donabedian is the 10th Planet qualifier from 10th Planet HQ will also be in the absolute. So this is really cool because it's no weight class. Adam Sacknoff made it to 205 somehow. He used to be a really big dude. I don't know if he's still a really big dude. He might be 205 now. Not 100% sure. But as that comes out, we will be giving more information. That is the same day as SUG 6. So I'm going to have that dual screen action going on.
Definitely.
Watching both things.
For this, I assume they'll put Craig Jones and Gordon Ryan on the opposite sides of the bracket.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You think put them, you think they'll guarantee?
It's hard. Like, I don't know how they seed it. Apparently, they actually seed these tournaments. The 10th Planet qualifier guy is normally the low seed.
Which is not unreasonable.
No, because it's just some random dude from 10th Planet that wins an in-house tournament, essentially. Sometimes they go far. Sometimes they shit the bed, which is always fun to watch. So that'll be interesting. Let's see if Gordon can defend his title as the EBI absolute champion, or if someone takes his place. Craig Jones is definitely a game competitor.
They had a match at ADCC.
Did they have that match at ADCC?
I thought Gordon won. I could be incorrect and be completely wrong. But I thought it was the quarterfinal or the semis.
Was it? I can't remember. I do know that Gordon and Shanji, or not Gordon and Shanji, Gordon and Craig and Shanji, there we go, English, competed and Shanji won that one.
Yeah. The last open that they had, the EBI had, was absolutely fantastic. I had a lot of fun watching it.
It was cool.
You saw some. I think DJ Jackson was in that one.
Yes.
Versus that giant Russian bear dude.
Rustem Chiziev.
Yes, Chiziev.
That's right. I said that one right.
Yeah. It was a fun event last time, so I'll definitely tune in this time. There'll be a dual screen between this and SUG.
I might have like my iPad running whatever is on a flow and then on my computer for EBI.
So we will continue to preview this as more matches get announced. I assume they're going to do a 16-man bracket.
Yep, still 16-man, but right now we have 7 people, so they've got to announce 9 more guys. I'm assuming they're going to have a couple of in-between special matches.
Usually they do. Usually have like 2 to 4.
Possibly grappling, possibly a CJJ match. I don't know. I'm always down to see more CJJ. I'm always down to see people advance that because we did see some better slapping techniques. Not the best, not Boss Rutten style slapping techniques, but it got better. I'm also interested if they're going to try to bring any of like kids match. They always like to push Grace Gundrum, mm-hmm. who is the emotionless young girl that they put out there. She smiles and it seems very forced. It's hilarious.
Is that the girl that broke the other girl's leg in half?
It might have been.
Grace, I think that was her.
It might have
and
been.
And then Eddie was like, okay, we got to stop doing heel hooks in kids' divisions.
No, I think that was a different one.
Okay.
I think that was a different match. But yeah, heel hooks with the kids, not the greatest idea. But Grace looks like a tiny little robot that has no real emotion and her only job is to destroy you.
Which is what you want to see from young competitors.
I guess so.
That's what I want to see.
That's what I want to see. I want to see you burn out and hate jiu-jitsu. Once you're like 16 years old, I don't even know how old she is. Like,
young.
She could be 16 right now, and I could be totally wrong.
She's young. Moving on, we're going to talk about the first half of the sumo tournament in Fukuoka.
Yay, Maine can talk. Woo! It's the Kyushu Basho, if you want to call it that, too. 2017.
So, what is the Fukuoka Basho? What is that?
The Fukuoka. That's where it is. So, like, each basho has a different name. Mind you, we're talking about sumo wrestling, if you're not 100% aware what we're mumbling about right now.
Yeah.
Sumo wrestling. I am a big sumo wrestling fan. Maine is into it, but doesn't know as much.
Not as much. I'm not as familiar with the verbiage, so we're going to kind of pause in piece of this where I kind of ask Josh to explain the verbiage for us, because it's interesting, and you see a lot of really cool techniques and really outstanding competitors, but I don't speak Japanese and don't understand a lot of what it is, but Josh is a huge fan, and it is grappling, so we are going to touch on it when there are big tournaments that come through.
And Maid made it seem like I spoke Japanese. Nope. I'll give you a domo arigato, but that is about it. And I make ramen, so there you go. That's about as Japanese as I get. Each tournament, and these are on the odd months, by the way. Well, yeah, the odd months, you know, January, March, May, you know, et cetera. This is obviously the November tournament. This is the last one of the year. The Kyushu Basho, again. Starting off, what you would call the tournament, quote-unquote, you get a listing of it as the Banzuke, which is the listing of every single rikishi or wrestler. And yes, rikishi is what they're called. It's not just a professional wrestler from WWF that dances. And it gives you a rundown from top to bottom of the top division of sumo. There are multiple divisions. The one that really matters and that you would see on things like Jason's All Sumo channel or Kintamayama's sumo highlight on YouTube. So check those out if you want to see it. And there's tons more that'll pop up in the suggested videos.
Yeah, NHK also does a really great English coverage of this tournament.
Right. Sometimes they're a little bit slower, and I'm really impatient when it comes to that stuff. I want my sumo, and I want it now. You know, we're in the information age. So that's the Makouchi, or Makunouchi, sometimes as it's called, division. That is the top. That between Makouchi and Juryo, those are the two divisions that actually get paid. But the one that's televised is the Makouchi division. And how that's broken down is you have the lower part of Makouchi, which is Maegashira, and that goes from Maegashira 1 to Maegashira 16. Also, it has East and West, or left and right, whatever you want to call it. That's not really significant in the scheme of things, other than it's which side they enter the ring, the dohyo. And a lot of times, the West is the more, quote-unquote, prestigious area to enter. But, you know, it's not really significant. So once you get past Maegashira, you get into Sandaime, which is the upper three, like, next level things past Maegashira, which is Komisubi, Sekewake, and Ozeki.
And if all this is a little bit much terminology, Wikipedia, and the English Wikipedia, actually has some really great breakdowns on a lot of this verbiage and a lot of actually how to figure out what Josh is saying.
Yeah.
It's initially where I started when I first started watching sumo, and I would actually recommend, if you're confused here, stop the podcast, read through that, and then Josh can go back into this explanation.
Yeah, I mean, if I started explaining every single thing, we'd be here for hours.
Yeah, sumo was a huge...
And I'm not even, like, super, super into these. I'm into it, but there are people that are way more knowledgeable than I am about these things.
Jason's all sumo.
There you go. You know, I just got to move to Japan, I guess. And then finally, above Ozeki is Yokozuna. Currently... There are four Yokozuna. There is not a limit to how many there has to be. At certain points, there were none. There were more than four, I think, a while back.
Yeah.
But currently, there are four.
And Yokozuna is?
The top. It is the king. It is not a fat Hawaiian wrestler from WWF. Again, you reign supreme. You are the best, or one of the best rikishi in the entire... You are the top of the mountain. There is no better than you. The other thing is, everybody else in sumo, other than the Yokozunas, can move up and down the rank. Yokozunas will stay Yokozunas until they choose to retire or are forced to retire by the sumo association. This is going to get really wordy if I don't keep moving on. So I'll spare you. Check out the SureDog forums, the grappling forums. Every time a basho rolls around, there is a thread on it. You'll see me pop up. If you want to know my username, it's Josh from MD, because I'm not creative. And you see all these things. Again, there are tons of links to different things. Reddit, R Sumo. There are blogs about it. There's tons of this stuff. that you can find that will give you a breakdown. And if you start to get into it, you start to pick up your favorite wrestlers, you know, techniques, you know, what kimarite means, what, you know, what the gyoji, who is the referee, is screaming while they're, you know, smashing into each other. And you also realize that sumo isn't just two fat dudes running into each other. There is a lot of technique in it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of varied technique. There's, you know, you have different wrestlers will choose and have different styles and have different things that they gravitate towards, different positions that they dominate from, and different positions that they typically have problems from.
Yeah, and I know most of the jiu-jitsu people have seen that one video of Takano Yama, who was the Russian, Czech?
I think he's Czech.
Bulgarian, something like that. Eastern Bloc. Tiny, 98 kilo.
Little guy, real small guy.
Yeah, who's a former judo player and got into sumo. He just couldn't get bigger. His body wouldn't allow it. But there are tons still of Bulgarian, Russian,
Estonian.
Estonian, Brazilian sumo wrestlers. Mongolians, most of the Yokozunas right now. Three-fourths of the Yokozunas are Mongolian.
It's not just a Japanese sport. There's really world representation. No, the majority are probably Japanese, but you see a lot of top-level guys coming from around the world and competing in sumo, especially in, you know, more recent years.
Right, and there has been an American Yokozuna as well. So again, it's a far-reaching sport. There is amateur sumo that you can, if you can find a club, you can join and do whatever you want to do. You know, they have world championships for it that you can qualify and go to. And they're different places every year, same like any other world championship. So, the big thing about the Kyushu Basho this year, what the big deal is the assault scandal dealing with one of the Yokozuna, Haruma Fuji. They are put in a bright light. They're well-respected. If you're a Yokozuna, you have a lot of sway in Japan.
It's a very, very prestigious,
respectable
thing to have.
Yeah, it's a position of power, essentially. You have a lot of, you know, a lot of sway in things that are going on, and you're looked up to by a lot of people. So, supposedly, Haruma Fuji, at first, when this first broke, Haruma Fuji assaulted Takanoiwa, who is at the moment Maegashira 8. So, you know, he's still up there. He supposedly smashed him in the head with a beer bottle, fractured his skull, you know, fractured his eye. Also, he beat the shit out of him. And again, there's also a level of respect in sumo. If you're a higher ranking, you know, Rikishi, if you are, you know, especially a Yokozuna, you demand a level of respect. And if somebody is
high level of respect,
if somebody is not talking to you properly or, you know, doing something that they're not supposed to do there, I mean, it's sort of expected that somebody's going to give you like a whack on the head, like a slap. But supposedly they were out drinking and, you know, doing karaoke, and some stuff went down with a cell phone. And at first it was reported that he smashed him in the head with a beer bottle and fractured his skull, and he couldn't compete. It's called going Kyujo. Kyujo. You know, withdrawing with injury.
It's not hugely uncommon.
It's not uncommon, but it still drops you down in the ranking.
Because you failed to compete.
Right. Taking off, it affects your ranking no matter what.
Which it should.
Yes. The Yokozuna have the ability to do that without repercussions, really, because they're not going anywhere.
You made it to Yokozuna.
Right. But if you keep doing it, eventually the Sumo Association will say, hey, it's time to retire. So it didn't really come out until a couple of days into the actual tournament that this happened. But Haruma Fuji, that was on his mind. He's kind of injured at the moment. So he lost, actually, his first three bouts, which is rare for him, before he withdrew from the tournament and has, you know, since not competed. This is a big deal. There were a lot of things in sumo. There was a match-fixing scandal, which a lot of people were involved with and kicked out of sumo for, or had been withdrawn from sumo for X amount of time. Asashoryu, who was another Yokozuna, was essentially forced to retire because of continuous bad behavior, you know, going out drunk and assaulting people, assaulting other wrestlers. It's really frowned upon. And if you're not Japanese, they're gonna pick on you even more when it comes to that stuff. And a couple of years back, several sumo wrestlers were involved in beating another one to death, you know, and that puts it, it puts a black mark on the sumo association. Nobody wants that to happen
in any sport, sumo regardless,
anything. You don't want to see somebody getting beaten to death and then nothing happens about it. So I can't say it was a good thing that this happened, but more and more as the story came out, it seemed less and less that, you know, the beating with a beer bottle happened. It was more like, hey, he got hit with a couple, you know, a couple slaps and apparently a karaoke remote. But, you know, it was then released yesterday that he didn't have a really bad fractured skull. It might be fractured. And it was reported incorrectly and the doctors apologized. This is when Asashoryu, who is, again, retired, but is Mongolian and was in the same Heia or Beia, which is sumo stable.
Sumo stable is basically is a gym, is a camp.
It's your gym, you know. It's wherever you're from. It's your Gracie Bajas. It's your Nova Uniaos. But it's
Atos.
Exactly. Of the sumo world. Asashoryu and Harumafuji were in the same stable, if I'm not mistaken. You know, again, I came in right after Asashoryu retired my sumo watching career. So I'm not 100% sure. I have to do a little bit more research on that. I've been watching sumo matches all day with all this stuff. So he came out to defend Harumafuji, saying that this didn't happen and he does not appreciate stealing from Trump, the fake news reporting that was going on by NHK. And then Hakuho, who is also Mongolian and arguably the best Yokozuna ever. He's won the most tournaments. You know, he had a streak going for a while of 50-something, like a 50-something unbeaten streak.
Which is unreal.
Yeah, it's hard to hit.
He's got 39 total wins. The next highest is 32.
Right.
So just absolutely dominant wrestler.
Dominant. He came out and was like, this also didn't happen. I wish I would have broken this up. I think they're coming to his aid because, again, they're fellow countrymen from Mongolia. And they're, you know, coming up and saying, this really didn't happen. We don't appreciate that this is going on, and it's sort of like a witch hunt. And you can see this in Hakuho's sumo. He's naturally aggressive. There's a sports science on him on YouTube somewhere. The equivalent of him running into you is like getting hit by a car at 35 miles an hour. You know, that's a lot of force that this guy creates. But he's been extra aggressive, which he's been, you know, scolded for repeatedly. It's frowned upon for you to push your opponent extra after you win. And he's been doing that with some vigor these past few days, especially his match today. He, you know, worked his opponent out of the ring right past the ropes and then just shoved him out, did a little spin and looked very unhappy. But that's the big goings on in sumo right now. Again, check out the Sherdog thread. Check out the channel that you can find on YouTube, Jason Saw Sumo, Kenta Mayama, which is highlights of all the matches, things like that. You'll see all the matches throughout the day. You know, you can go through, look at previous tournaments, find other people, figure out some of the lingo that's going on.
Wikipedia, again, is a great resource.
Wikipedia is a great resource for real things. But if you start following Kenta Mayama, he'll start putting in acronyms for things. Is that the right word? Acronyms?
That's
probably like HNH. So if you're wondering what HNH is, if you do peek at that, that's Henka, not Henka. And Henka is a pulling move. Where when the match starts, It's traditional that you run into each other. That's expected of you. And when you don't do that, when you run and then you just sort of turn and...
You sidestep.
You sidestep it.
It's legal, but it's frowned upon,
especially when it comes to the Yokozuna. Like, you're supposed to run headfirst into your opponent because you are the champion. So when you see H&H, which you see a lot with Haruma Fuji, where he's got this really cool technique where he comes in and just as he's hitting you, he turns the corner. It's very interesting and it works very well. So you'll see that used a lot. Going in, I know I'm leaving a ton of stuff out, and if I wanted to, I could make this like 3 hours of just talking about sumo.
Yeah,
and
we're actually going to recap at the end of the tournament. We'll recap the whole happenings, thing, who moves won, in the standings, and exactly
so on and so forth,
how it impacts.
But going in, the other two Yokozuna, Kakuryu, who again Mongolian, he pulled out at the beginning as well. A lot of people were weirded out that he even made it. I mean, he won two tournaments as an Ozeki, which is a requirement to be promoted to Yokozuna, but he's been very, very, very hit or miss since. And then Kisei no Sato, the first Japanese Yokozuna in almost 20 years.
19 and a half or something?
Yeah, like almost 20. It was really close. 20
years.
Is 4-4 right now. He got injured after his first tournament as Yokozuna, and he's not looking his self. He's quite aggressive. I think technically he's the biggest Yokozuna in height and in weight.
He's a large gentleman.
He's a big dude. But his sumo just looks super weak right now, and I think it's the injury, and I'm pretty sure after today I'm going to, you know, wake up in the morning, jump on the Kenta Miyama's YouTube channel and see that he pulled out for the day and will be out the rest of the tournament. I don't know yet. We'll see. The sumo looks honestly like hot garbage right now. And while I'm not a huge fan of his, and I think it's kind of weird that he got promoted after winning one tournament, I think they really wanted a Japanese Yokozuna. He's just not looking how he normally looks, and it, you know, he's looking weak, and I don't want him to be pulled as a Yokozuna because of that. So he needs to heal up, you know, and we'll get into it more. We'll talk about other people going in, talking about, you know, who I enjoy sumo wise, who main enjoy sumo wise, what I've learned over, I don't know, 6 or 7 years watching sumo, and main, what have you been watching for, like a year,
about
2 years,
year,
something like
year
that.
And a half, 2 years, or something like,
yeah,
that.
It's really interesting. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of cool techniques, shit like that. But
so we're gonna be touching on sumo from time to time, and you know, if you're not a fan, you can skip through it. If you're,
yeah,
a fan, we'd suggest,
like,
give it a chance, take a look at it. It is interesting grappling, and again, it's a world-reaching sport. Same reason we touch on judo. Same reason we touch on.
Touch on wrestling when we're, you know, the big wrestling tournaments come around. Yeah. I'll talk about sumo. See, I'm talking about sumo now. Talk about sambo. There we are.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm a big combat sambo fan.
Whatever is coming around, if it involves grappling in some way, as long as it's not like X-Arm, where if you've been around for a while, you know what I'm talking about with arm wrestling / jiu-jitsu,
kickboxing
/ MMA. Or, you know, the World Combat League that Chuck Norris used to run. That's the first time I saw Pat Barry, and he leg-kicked, TKO'd somebody.
Or a hit league, that Russian 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 event. You know, Josh and I have been around for a little bit at this point. We've seen
a lot of
grappling
shit.
Events, and eventually, you know, in this podcast, we will touch on the more relevant grappling events. It's typically going to be a mostly jiu-jitsu podcast because that is what Josh and I practice,
yeah,
and compete in. But we will touch on, you know, other grappling events from time to time because, you know, this is the Grappling Rewind. That's what we do.
Yep. So, yeah, we'll be back next week with the wrap-up of the Kyushu Ba show from Fukuoka. And maybe at that point, Maine will be able to say Fukuoka properly.
No.
Probably not. But we'll get him saying some of these names that are amusing. We'll try to get him to pronounce, like, Chiyokuni or Tochinoshin. He's totally going to screw it up, and it's going to be great. So, yep, that wraps up sumo for right now. Moving on. So that pretty much wraps up this episode, episode 3 of the Grappling Rewind podcast. We will be previewing more stuff next week. I know it was mentioned that we were going to cover Worlds. That's a little bit further away. We'll probably get into that next week when there's more information that we've dove into. We'll get into the Fight to Win Pro 57 after the 56 one. We'll get into the Kaisei Pro, which is a new promotion that is paying grapplers. Yay! We might touch on the Flow Grappling Awards if they talk about these things. Apparently, it's a month-long award show.
Yeah, I saw that too. I'm not really exactly certain what that is. I mean, honestly, I'm happy that Flow Grappling is putting on some sort of award show to recognize great grapplers throughout the year. I have absolutely no idea what it's going to be.
Are they awarding them the best streaming website to watch grappling? Flow Grappling.
They're not wrong, though. I mean, pick Fight Pass and them are the only ones that show grappling, and then you can go to each
inchbyinch.tv,
which had some production issues last time.
There we go.
So, I mean, you have two there's two services to
the
watch.
The Copa Podio one.
You can call there's Fight to Win. I mean, sorry, there's Flow Grappling, and there is UFC. Like, those are the only two services that primarily show grappling events.
Pretty much.
And so you can catch like other like promotion to promotion things, and every super fight organization has their own online service that you can watch their local event, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but as far as centralized grappling services to watch, you know, Flow Grappling's the only place to get it.
That's true. So that apparently runs from December 5th until January 4th. That might be a mistake. I don't know. Maybe it's a month long thing. Kind of weird. Again, Kaisei Pro, IBJJF Nogi Worlds, which will be super interesting. That really rounds out the year for grappling cards that's being streamed. I know there's 8 billion other things. There's Metamoris,
which allegedly.
Allegedly.
We'll see if it actually comes back.
I am not paying for that. I refuse. I hope someone streams it like AJ Agazarm did the last time.
So if you're unfamiliar with Metamoris is Halleck Gracie's event.
That's
and
psychopath.
They are notorious for not paying their competitors. It's a pro event that if you win, you get paid.
Maybe.
Well, you're supposed to get paid. And then Halleck is routinely just not paid the competitors.
I got to use the money to put on good productions.
So his last event was an event to pay the athletes that he didn't pay the previous events. And then that event ended up not paying the athletes that he didn't pay previously or the athletes on it. So now he's running a new event.
To pay off all the rest of the debts, which won't happen.
That's why he also took a fight with Bellator versus Kato. In which he headbutted him in the sternum, and the referee went, "Hey, you can't do that. This isn't Vale Tudo anymore."
It's a great move, though.
It is a great move, actually. In IBC, back in the 1999 card that Vandalay fought on, you had someone actually break someone's sternum with a headbutt to the sternum because it was legal back then.
I'm a proponent of burying your head in your opponent's stomach while doing jiu-jitsu, a.k.a. headbutting somebody and trying to make it not look like a headbutt.
You may help.
Yeah, it's kind of a dick move, but it's hilarious. So that might happen. That's Gordon Ryan versus Halleck Gracie. So that'll be interesting.
Any idea what happened with the AJ, whatever his last name is?
Agazarm
event with Halleck, because Halleck called him out and then announced he was on, and then
it's not gonna happen.
And then on Instagram, two different cards on the same day in two different locations were announced. One was in Denver, one was in like Long Beach or something.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
but
so I don't know.
I don't think it's gonna happen. I don't even know if this Metamoris, which is, again, a stupid name. I don't think that will happen either.
So we'll see. If it does happen, you know, we'll find a way to cover it. I refuse to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm not either. I tried my hardest to support it. And
I watched the first four, I think. Four or five.
I've watched all of them. Fortunately, I found a way to... they got mad because I was complaining to them that they didn't give me my money back, because they kept charging me, and then they got my card information stolen, and somebody was buying lunch in Mexico.
Well, you know why they did that, right? They were storing all their information in plain text.
Yeah, because they're idiots.
If you went on their site, because I watched their heavyweight Grand Prix thing that they're doing to choose who's going to fight Jeff Monson.
Yeah.
And what you could do is you could just put in any credit card information and any information, and it would go through and give you paid access to the site, which if that happens, that means there's no card verification going on, and they're just storing information plain text and sending it over the internet to a server, and then at a later date, someone's putting the information into a system and charging you, which is, I don't necessarily think illegal to do, but it's just kind of bad business practice, which is why Josh got his card stolen.
Yeah, it was amusing. I sent them a lot of angry emails, and they were like, you're not going to do that. And I was like, oh, watch me. And I did chargebacks to them and reported them. And yeah, they stopped paying people after that. But I also got their service free for however, until they stopped making
their online service
cards or fight cards, competitive cards, whatever you want to call them. I got to watch Caro versus, was that AJ? Caro versus AJ?
They put on some fantastic
matches. Some decent matches, but still.
And they were one of the first ones doing paid super fights.
Fuck them. You know, it burnt quickly. And again, they put on some great cards, but it just was not meant to be. Eddie versus Hoyler, they got that together. That was awesome. I wonder if a great match. I hope they paid them. That was awesome. And they also put on the Bushesha Hodger 1 card, which was a close one where Bushesha looked like he could have won that one. But then, of course, you know, they had that other super fight again, and Bushesha lost. So, again, wrapping this all up, thanks for giving us a listen. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Grappling Rewind. You can reach us at grapplingrewind@gmail.com.
You can follow Josh on Instagram at chops_and_chokes.
And I don't think Maine has an Instagram. Do you have an Instagram, Maine?
No.
No. How about a Twitter?
No.
You can follow me on Twitter at Josh_from_MD, because I'm not creative and I love using underscores, apparently, on Twitter. Eventually, we'll get a little social media thing together when we're not, you know, a ragtag podcast, when we're, you know, smarter about things and being able to advertise a little bit.
When we're less super busy.
When we're less super busy having real jobs and competing. But yeah, thanks for listening and see you next week.
If you have any questions, please email us at grapplingrewind@gmail.com. Also, if you like the show, please leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us out.